Totally Football Show. Today, we look back on the midweek action brought to you by the Premier League's new streaming cast partner. As clubs provide the full Amazon experience, Spurs repeatedly putting things in the box for very little reward, Liverpool always delivering when Everton are not at home, and West Ham just not bothering with attacks. We ran up all the big news and we tease ourselves with the weekend's exciting Premier League fixtures, including the Manchester Derby and West Ham Arsenal. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Here for you today. We're offering a choice of four views simultaneously. They're all a bit blurry and lagging well behind, but still, there's Duncan Alexander, just back from Korea.
Hi, James.
Tom Williams, the author of Do You Speak Football?
Hello, James.
The Athletic's Michael Cox, author of The Mixer and Zonal Marking.
Hi, James.
And we're trying out a new voice today, so bear with him. From the Greatest Game podcast, it's Jamie Carragher.
Hi, James.
Yes, hello, Darren Farley. So you could be with us today. It's astonishing how you do it. I'm kidding, of course. Jamie's with us today off the back of the Sky Sports Christmas party, Jamie.
Yes. So I'd like to come back again and give me best on another occasion. But yes, it went well, especially right on the back of a derby win for Liverpool, which we watched.
Absolutely. And it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on that very shortly and on all sorts of other things. More than 700 games for Liverpool. 11 major trophies, and you've read both of Michael's books.
Yes.
Which one did you prefer?
The latest one.
Right.
I did enjoy that one, the European football one.
Nice.
Really good. Still in the back of my car in the boot. I have read it. I'm in the process of actually passing it on to someone. I haven't quite got there, but every time I open my boot, it's there.
I don't do that. I get him to buy another one. Zonal parking.
Nice. Hey. Busy midweek, Duncan. Liverpool notched up their biggest win of the season, pushing Everton into the bottom three. Saints climbed out of the relegation zone. Ahead of the weekend's Manchester derby, City had a big win over Burnley, and Man United did okay as well, beating Spurs and their former manager Jose Mourinho and climbing past them two into sixth, where they are 9 points closer to Watford in last place than they are to Liverpool.
Someone actually pointed out to me on Twitter last night, and this is better than the thing I put, that Man United are closer to 0 points than they are to Liverpool, which is possibly not where you want to be in early December, but there you go.
Astonishing. Now, Michael, you went to a game midweek.
Yes, I went to Stamford Bridge.
And everybody else stayed at home and tried out the Amazon experience. How was it for you, Tom?
Yeah, it was good. The only issue I had was I watched Man United Spurs on my telly and then watched the Amazon Goal Centre on my iPad, but the goal show thing was in front of the telly, which was a bit confusing. But that aside, very slick. No complaints here.
Okay. Yeah, no, for some reason, it seemed to work much less well on television than it did on a laptop. I don't know if that was anybody else's experience.
Worked well on both, me.
Did it?
Mm.
Okay.
Smooth.
Right.
But it was good. The goal show, I mean, I know that there are a lot of people online saying, oh, this happens in every other country in the world, but I think for people in the UK, it was exciting to have be able to watch all the goals go in live as it happened.
Finally. Mm. We've been waiting for a show like that to come along. Finally, Amazon.
With real clubs, yeah.
With real clubs and real pundits. Excellent. And Jamie, you went to karaoke after the Merseyside derby.
Yes, that's the only thing for it. When you win 5-2 in a derby game, there's no better place to go to celebrate than karaoke, and had a little go at Bohemian Rhapsody.
For the record, it was Bohemian Rhapsody with Gary?
Yes.
Okay,
how did you divvy up? Yeah, I'm not sure who that was.
Right, okay. How did you divvy up the vocal duties?
Basically, whenever the fella in the middle gave us the mic.
Okay.
He was hogging it.
Magnificent. Do you like a karaoke?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Only with a drink.
Right. All right, then. Well, you certainly had a lot to celebrate, and the Merseyside derby is topic one today. 5-2 for Jurgen Klopp's side. The kind of knock on whom previous to this game was that they won repeatedly, but they hadn't really had a good performance. Have they now?
Yes, it was a lot better, and I think Liverpool, as you mentioned then, about not playing well in certain games, but they've always turned up in the big games. For Liverpool, Everton is a huge game, no matter where they are on the table. And if you think of Man City at home, Leicester at home, Spurs, Arsenal, the real sort of big games this season, Liverpool have really performed like a top team. It's the other games where they've almost just done enough, really, to get across the line and to score five, certainly with the front line that they had out, which, when I saw it, I was shocked, I must say, that he'd made those changes. I was expecting those changes to come on Saturday at Bournemouth. But it was still, when you looked at it, I was thinking the only thing that was keeping me going was, I think this front line scored 4 against Barcelona, so you can't complain too much, really, when you see the team. But I just thought Mane was outstanding. I think at this moment he's... I actually put a tweet out, maybe with a few drinks and me getting really excited, when he was setting goals up in the first half, that he's in the World 11 playing left wing. Well, certainly in my World 11 playing left wing. But the fact that he was the one who was picked, and not Salah, not Firmino, and this is the player who I think has had 2 weeks off, basically, after, you know, the summer tournament, gone straight into the team. He's just... he's an absolute machine.
Yeah, you tweeted, Mane, you're a machine. 2 weeks off in the summer, 3! My favourite player by a mile. What does it say about Liverpool that a huge game, as you say, but Klopp basically went with squad players? And what does it say about Liverpool that they won so convincingly with those squad players?
Well, I remember there was a game 2 or 3 years ago where he made a lot of changes for a Merseyside derby, and they drew 0-0, and there was a lot of allegations afterwards that, you know, he didn't get the Merseyside derby, he didn't understand what an occasion it was. But I just think Liverpool is such a good side at the moment, and to be frank, Everton is, you know, so poor that, you know, with this December, he's probably going to have to rotate almost every game. I don't think there'll be many games in December where we'll see Liverpool's first choice 11. So, yeah, I think a home game against Everton, who are now in the bottom three, you can get away with, you know, resting your best players.
Yeah, I mean, Divock Origi's got a great record against Everton, so it's probably less of a gamble than it looked like it was at first. For me, the most exciting thing about the game was it was Mike Dean's first ever match at Anfield in the Premier League, which seems bizarre, but is true.
Aren't there various conspiracies about which side of Merseyside his loyalties lie? Obviously, he is a Tranmere Rovers fan, which is well known, but I'm sure there have been whisperings about whether he leans towards the Reds or the Blues.
I mean,
maybe
the only two Premier League entities to have more than 150 penalties are Liverpool with 157 and Mike Dean with 151. So it was a shame that they couldn't combine last night for their trademark move. But he had a good game, actually, because it was a bit feisty in the first half, and he didn't lose control.
Where does Origi sit in your favourite players in the world right now, Jamie?
Oh, Origi. What do you say about Origi? Oh.
Well, Rockahula, for example.
He's possibly the best, worst player in the world. If that's... I don't know how... He's just... He just scores in big games. He's a legend at Liverpool. I think he's what you call a cult hero, I'd say, really. I think if one of the front three were out for a long time, you would worry going forward. But you actually look at the goals he's got, his minutes, the goals ratio, big game goals. It's unbelievable. But you would worry as a Liverpool supporter if one of the front three got a serious injury. Maybe what Fabinho's got now, if someone was out for 6 to 8 weeks, really. And if you actually look at it, the last few games when Salah's missed, he's actually not put Origi in. He's put Oxlade-Chamberlain as part of the front three, which doesn't quite work, really. And it is something that I think Liverpool would struggle with if, as I said, one of the big three were out. But he just produces big goals.
When you say worst best footballer or best worst footballer, do you mean is he like in the kind of Pippo Inzaghi mode, not actually very technically talented?
No, yeah, exactly like that. But he scored 2 goals in the Champions League final against me, so I can't really say nothing about Inzaghi.
But okay, so if Origi's a guy who's good at being in the right place at the right time, but part of that was extraordinary service he was getting on Wednesday night. I mean, the balls flying in were just extraordinary,
well,
level, huh?
Yeah, Trent Alexander-Arnold once again. That's now 15 Premier League assists just this year in the Premier League, which is insane. He's now got as many Premier League assists since the start of last season as Jack Wilshere ever managed in, or has managed in his entire career. So, you know, he's becoming semi-unplayable, really. The way Liverpool switched the play is just, you know, teams can't cope.
It just felt like there were through balls coming in from almost every angle yesterday. I mean, Jordan Henderson played a couple of great balls to Mane that he didn't quite take advantage of. But Henderson, you don't really associate Henderson with playing balls like that. And I guess you have to question Everton's defensive line as well, right, which, you know, looked pretty high up the pitch.
And the pass from Mane for the first goal was an absolute beauty. And there was a great camera angle. You could sort of see Mane's line of vision. You can kind of see him admiring the pass as it goes in. And yeah, Lovren with the pass for Origi's second. Trent Alexander-Arnold with the drilled pass in the build-up to the Shaqiri's goal, I think. Yeah, absolute quality.
If you're Everton, was there anything they could have done about that against a Liverpool side on that kind of form?
I found the team selection a bit puzzling. I mean, it was the same team that Marco Silva had picked for the game at Leicester, where Everton actually did quite well and lost to that very late goal that needed to be upheld by VAR, having originally been ruled out for offsides. They were obviously in that game. But you look at the composition in the midfield, played with a back five, then their centre mids are Tom Davies and Gylfi Sigurdsson, Iwobi and Richarlison wide, and then I think it was Calvert-Lewin up front on his own. And I just think when you've got the amount of quality in that Liverpool midfield, surely you need to put more up against that than Tom Davies and Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's never been a defensive-minded midfielder. And, I must admit, I didn't see the Leicester game, and obviously must have worked relatively well in that game if he'd stuck with it. But, yeah, you saw the team selection last night, and it did look curious.
Yeah, it did work relatively well against Leicester. It feels like it was a selection where it was... The notable thing about the Leicester performance was they really were fighting, I thought. You know, it wasn't a sign of a group of players who'd given up on the manager. It just felt like a selection that was, OK, we've got to keep that together rather than looking at the opposition. And obviously the result was conceding five goals.
Well, there's a lot of talk that there's talks going on at Everton this Thursday morning. We'll see how that goes. It does seem a bit harsh to judge Silva on away at the King Power and then a derby game that they haven't won for decades. But next up for Everton, it's Chelsea at the weekend, who, Michael, you'll be telling us all about later on, fresh from seeing them in action against Villa. And Liverpool, meantime, will be facing Bournemouth. Jamie, as a boyhood Everton fan, what's your take on the mess at Goodison? What would you do?
Well, they're in a situation now where they have to change the manager. They're in the bottom three now. And I was a big, strong advocate of Marco Silva getting the job when that first came up and there was different names getting mentioned. I liked what I'd saw at Hull and Watford. I know people reference that and say, oh, he got relegated at Hull, but I think he'd done a really good job at Hull. He lost, I think, Snodgrass at January. He was the best player for Hull. His team were organised. He gave them a fighting chance, basically. And, you know, you actually watch Everton, and I know, you know, on this show you speak about expected goals and things, and that's something we look at times on Monday Night Football. If you actually look at a lot of the numbers for Everton, they're not for a team who are in the bottom three, really, in terms of they haven't got a centre forward who can score. And I think the goalkeeper let them down at different times. And I think there was a stat I saw on Twitter last night, maybe a half-time, that Jordan Pickford had conceded the last five shots on target at Anfield. You know, he's not making saves, you go back. And it has to change, because as soon as the fear of relegation comes in, you have to change the manager. And I've had this discussion with a lot of Everton fans, who a lot of still in my family, friends, who I mix with on a daily basis, and they're so against David Moyes coming back to the club.
They're so against it?
So against it, you wouldn't believe. And considering the job he did there, which I thought was miraculous at the time, considering the financial restraints at Everton then, which is different now. But I don't think they've got any option. They've been in this situation, I think, 12, 18 months ago. They bring Big Sam in, and it's almost coming in to do a Sam Allardyce type of job, really, in terms of just keeping them up. But I just don't know where they go from there, because if the fans don't want them and David Moyes keeps them up, what do you then do? Are you then looking for another manager to keep David Moyes? So it's in a very difficult predicament. But I actually think Everton's not an easy club to run or manage, because how are they ever going to be where the supporters want them to be? You know, being in the top four or competing with Liverpool, it's not easy. So they're basically one of those clubs who's been left behind, really, with the Premier League. And it's, unless they get a Man City-type ownership, they're never going to get back to where the supporters maybe feel they should be.
On the silver front, Michael, we talk a lot about players getting better under managers improving their teams. Is that one count that Marco Silva really falls down by, given that nobody at this Everton team seems to be in any way improved by his presence?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that angle before, but I can't think of anyone to disprove that theory. So,
right, yeah. Okay. As I say, decision pending, apparently, at Everton. We'll talk more about the future in terms of this weekend, perhaps a little bit later on. Would you get into this Liverpool side, Jamie?
I certainly wouldn't. Would I get in the Liverpool team?
You've got to be in ahead of Lovren, no?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Lovren's a strange one in that you can watch Lovren for 90 minutes and think he's one of the top centre-backs in the world, as he said himself. but then he'll just do something when you go, oh, Dejan, no. And
Dejan vu, we call it.
Yeah. But I'm a big fan of Matip. I like him. I think Matip goes in alongside Van Dijk at this moment. Certainly as Liverpool's next best centre-back. The great thing about Van Dijk, and the great thing about every great centre-back you go through the Premier League era, they make other people look good, and that's what Virgil van Dijk does. He just automatically, the rest of the back four, we're talking about the full backs being fantastic, we're now talking about Lovren doing really well, Matip, and it's just the presence of van Dijk. I think someone like Tony Adams, if you talk about the famous Arsenal back four, if you actually look at them as individuals, you wouldn't say they were great players, really. Think of Winterburn, Dixon, Keown, Bold. A lot of those players bought from lower leagues by George Graham, as was the case, certainly in the late 80s, where you bought players from. But to be such a famous back four or back five, including the keeper, a lot of that was Tony Adams, I think. You know, just having that presence there, making other people play better. It's almost like the kids are with the dad and the dad's looking after the kid, you know, just making sure everyone's okay. And I just think Van Dijk has that effect on everyone.
He's the daddy.
Everyone. He's the daddy.
Who was the daddy for you then? Were you the daddy?
I was the daddy.
All right, excellent. Good. All right, after this, we'll talk about what happened at Old Trafford.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Right, Man United. They failed to beat Sheffield United. They failed to beat Aston Villa. They lost at Astana. But they beat Spurs, who won all their games so far under Jose Mourinho. Why? What happened?
Well, as Jose Mourinho rather slyly alluded to after the game, United have actually got quite a good record under Solskjaer when they're playing the bigger clubs. You look at some of the wins they've had this season, the 4-0 against Chelsea on the opening weekend, which was not a 4-0 game, but which they made a good job of. They've also beat Leicester at home. And then we saw that again against Spurs. And I think something that Jose Mourinho may come to realise is that he is going to need to pick one of Eriksen and Ndombele if he wants to look after the ball better. He went for Winks and Sissoko in centre mid last night, which is something that Pochettino kept going back to without ever really any great success. And I think from a United perspective, Scott McTominay coming back in made a massive difference. He's arguably been their best player this season. And again, talking about players who influence those around them, Fred looks like, you know, a sort of competent footballer when he's got McTominay alongside him. You can't really say the same thing when he isn't there. And with that platform, it means that the likes of Rashford, who's obviously in tremendous form, Daniel James, even Jesse Lingard, who I thought looked quite bright, they've then got a platform to go and perform. And in fairness, I mean, it was only 2-1, but it was pretty comfortable for United. You never really got the sense that Spurs were going to get back into it.
All right. Did it help the fact that Martial was out and Rashford could play in his more natural position?
I mean, he has played there quite a lot. I mean, Solskjaer kind of swaps them both around. The problem United have got with those two players is that they both want to play in exactly the same area of the pitch, and they're both very similar players. But, you know, Rashford has shown the last few weeks, you know, that he looks like he's making that step now that we've all been waiting him to make since he had his breakthrough season. I mean, you look the last three seasons, he kind of feels like he's plateaued a little bit, but he's currently on 13 for the season at United. Sorry, he's on 12 for the season for United, which is one less than his best ever tally
for the whole season.
So he looks like he's making that step, and you hope that when Martial does come back to fitness, Solskjaer finds a way of fitting them both into the team that allows Rashford to play the way that he's playing at the moment.
Nice. John Morgan's got two questions. One for Duncan. How is the Amazon win probability worked out?
Magic.
No, but it's there kind of on the screen.
No, it's obviously based on, you know, team ability, game state, things like that. So, and obviously, right, when stuff happens in the match, that will then adjust. So,
was that a useful stat to have up, or was it just because it was a different stat, do you think?
Well, it's new. It's quite a popular thing in American sports.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
So, to let you know what is probably going to happen.
Yeah.
Is that something you could do in everything, like in dramas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like probability Midsummer Murders, probability of a murder in the next 8 minutes has gone up to 80% because a lady's gone into the village shop or something, yeah. Could happen.
Is that a good indicator of?
To be honest, I've never seen it. But okay. I'm guessing.
Nicely done. All right. Sorry. The second question, John, is try not to be too reactive, says John Morgan. But is Fred quietly becoming a good player for Man United? Like Ant needs Deck, does he need McTominay?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I was at the game at Bramall Lane when Scott McTominay was not there, and right, Fred was playing alongside Andreas Pereira, and he looked absolutely hopeless. And Fred has frequently looked absolutely hopeless when he plays for United. But when he does seem to look like a better player alongside McTominay. You know, I think he feels less responsibility to kind of manage the midfield when he's got McTominay alongside him. I don't think he's ever going to be a world beater, but we saw at Shakhtar, he's a decent player. I mean, he's a Brazil international, so there is a decent player there.
I think he's got a branding issue. I think if you're called Fred, you're always starting from a major disadvantage in terms of people's perception of you. For Spurs, the good news, Dele Alli scored again. Oh my word, what a goal.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, there's probably a great compilation you could do of great goals in Premier League matches that actually just happen in defeats, and that is going to be right up there because it was incredible. What a touch.
Yeah.
Ball dropped from high. He kind of flicked it with his right foot between two defenders and then swiveled and finished. So.
Yeah, magnificent.
And VAR getting involved with a potential handball. I mean, that would have been possibly the most unpopular VAR moment that we've seen so far if that had been ruled out for handball.
All right, well, that was the good news anyway, Dele Alli. The bad news is that this was, by, I think, common consent, back to the levels that saw their previous manager walk in terms of their application, desire, commitment, that kind of thing. Any idea about how to pass between each other and create a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the biggest surprise is that Mourinho's come in and they are not really defending well at all. I mean, that's the first time they've conceded two or more goals in four consecutive games since 2015. So, you know, you imagine Mourinho coming into a club, well, his first thing he'll do is at least tighten the defence up, and that hasn't happened. So,
no, indeed not. Well, they'll be facing Burnley at the weekend, while Man United take on Manchester City. That's Saturday tea time. City, who did look a bit back to their old selves against Burnley midweek with a 4-1 victory at Turf Moor. Can United hurt Manchester City, Jamie?
I don't think they can.
No?
No. I expect Manchester City to win that comfortably, to be honest. I think that whenever Manchester City plays, certainly at home, really. I think I go back to a game a few years ago, this game, when I think Mourinho was in charge and Man City, I think, were 2-0 up. And it could have been 5 or 6 up. Raheem Sterling was missing chances. I think he played centre forward that day, and Pogba got in on the act, I think, and they won the game 3-2, I think. I actually expect City to have that dominance again, but to then go on and, you know, win the game. I know Manchester United got that result last night against Spurs, but I don't see anything but a Man City win. I think there's a huge gulf between the teams.
They got a result against Liverpool, though, didn't they? I mean, of a sort. They do tend to perform, as you were mentioning on Monday, a bit better when they take on the top sides.
Yeah, and I think Solskjaer performs better. I think I've been quite impressed by some of his game plans away at Arsenal, away at Spurs last year when they kind of used a diamond and two wide forwards. They do seem to be able of, you know, switching formation and causing the opposition a surprise. But a little bit like what we said with Emery, it's quite reactive. But when you have to fall back and play a plan A, you wonder really what the default is with United.
Okay. Well, they have pace, though, and with City's defence struggling somewhat at the moment, there's a chink in the armour there, no?
I mean, City have got 5 league games without a clean sheet, which for a team who have been so solid defensively the last two seasons is pretty surprising. And yeah, you know, as we've been saying, one thing that Solskjaer does seem to be quite good at is making game plans for these big matches. And I actually think if you look at the makeup of the United squad, they're better suited to playing on the counter-attack because primarily they've got so much pace on the break than they are trying to dominate teams with possession football. So, I mean, I can see United scoring, but City looked a bit more like their old selves against Burnley. So yeah, I mean, you'd have to back a City win here, I think.
Right, goals for Rodri, Riyad Mahrez, and 2 for Gabriel Jesus, leading some hilarious Jesus beats Pope tweeted from Duncan over there. A very impressive performance. Not you, Man City.
Yeah, they looked good. I mean, it should be pointed out that Burnley away is one of these fixtures that people flag up as a really tough place to go. But
like Crystal Palace.
Yeah, but Burnley have actually only won one of their last 20 home games against Big Six teams. So it's actually not a very hard place to go. So, yeah.
Quite the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. So,
one win and 17 defeats in the last 20 against Big Six sides.
Yeah, and that one win was against Tottenham in a spiral as the Pochettino era kind of unravelled. So, yeah, it was a good win for City, but it's kind of what you would expect.
Right. Although United equally have not a bad record against Man City at the Etihad. They've won 2 and drawn 1 of their last 4 visits. I think you were just referencing the one where Pogba dyed his hair blue and, you know, spent too much time worrying about his hair.
I think these two games, certainly the Spurs game and the City game, the weekend was seen as, I think, really big games for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Mm. It was just starting to, maybe the screw was just starting to turn in terms of people really questioning his role and suitability to manage Manchester United. So I think it was a huge win for him against Spurs. I think it almost takes the pressure off in some ways for the game at Man City because no one's expecting Manchester United to get something and 3 points out of 6. I think Manchester United fans, where they are, I think would be, or certainly would be acceptable. Well, it was certainly acceptable to Gary Neville last night after the Tottenham win. He was
really,
he was more than happy to, I wouldn't say wave the white flag to Manchester City, but he's got his 3 points out of the six that he wanted as a Manchester United fan, so he's more than happy last night. But it just feels like Manchester United and Solskjaer seem to get the win when they really need it in terms of his job. You think of the Leicester game, certainly the performance against Liverpool, when it feels like people are really sort of focusing in on him. He seems to, you know, produce a result. I wouldn't say that keeps him in a job, but certainly keeps the criticism off his back, shall we say. But I think a bad derby defeat, as we know, with Marco Silva, certainly does not go down well.
No, indeed not. As a player, he helped his club so much by coming off the bench. I wonder if he might do the same as a manager. But, we'll see what happens. On Saturday, do you want to make a prediction here, Michael, after boldly suggesting that Man United would trouble Spurs on Monday?
Yeah, I agree with, I think, what Tom said. I think United will score. I mean, if Rashford plays like that, you know, the City's right side of their defence isn't particularly strong at the moment.
Just to back up Tom's point a bit about clean sheets.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. No,
keep it going.
We are, this is the first Premier League season ever to see under 0.5 clean sheets per game for teams. So, you know, even Liverpool, miles clear at the top, have kept two clean sheets. The famous Derby team in 07-08 had kept one clean sheet by this point. So, you know, both teams scoring in the game is pretty standard. So, right. Yeah, I think United will almost certainly score, but I think City will score more.
Jamie, apologies if you've covered this extensively on a Monday night, but is that something that you can explain why so many teams that have spent so much money, even this summer, on bringing in defenders, but even Liverpool, who have Van Dijk, who have probably one of the best fullback pairings in the world and an amazing keeper, why nobody can keep a clean sheet this year?
I mean, it's something you think about, and with watching the Liverpool game last night, the playing such a high line that I think there was a chance in the second half. Moise Keane went through and missed a really good chance at one stage. It almost feels like every game Liverpool play now, the opposition will go through on goal at least once. And there was almost a feeling, I think, with VAR coming in, where, you know, you're not gonna fall foul of a bad linesman decision, that they're being almost too brave in holding this line and thinking they can catch teams offside. I don't like it when I'm watching it, really. I don't think it's right that the opposition should be going through on goal different times. That's just speaking from a Liverpool point of view. I mean, a fellow from the local press done something on Liverpool conceding goals. Before last night, I think 80% of Liverpool's goals they conceded were sort of in the last 10 minutes of a game, when the game was almost won or they were 2-0 up. And it was sort of actually being a concentration thing and maybe not pressing as much because the game was won and different things. But it actually feels like, or I think it is proven, that VAR is probably taking more goals away than it's actually given in some way. So it is surprising that so few teams are keeping clean sheets, but there's not too many daddies about in the back four.
I suppose that's right. Yeah, after this, Michael's trip to Stamford Bridge.
Here he is, Fairweather Freddy. Supported United back when they were winning titles. Switched to City when they came good. Oh, you're backing this weekend, Freddy?
Well, Merseyside is technically only 45 minutes away from me house, so I thought that...
Yes, it's a season of giving away points in Manchester, but for the rest of us, it's a season of giving. And Paddy Power are giving you money back as a free bet on all markets if Raheem Sterling scores against Man United. Paddy Power, home of the money back special.
On this match only, max free bet £10. Pre-match singles only. Online exclusive. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Listener, there's an interview when you're done with this show with the current Blackpool manager Simon Grayson in our a new Totally Football League show that is out now. There's also, if you're at a loose end, a new Golazzo available. It's all about Everton and Inter legend Marco Materazzi, a.k.a. The Matrix. Were you a Materazzi fan, Jamie?
Not really, no.
No?
He was... he's a World Cup winner, isn't he? He was really poor for Everton.
Champions League winner.
Yeah. Well, he was a sub, wasn't he? I'm not massive on people who claim medals when they were subs, to be honest. But
no, Jimmy Traore.
Yeah, well, he started in Istanbul, so he can, as you say. But no, I think, I'm not sure he came on in that final. Did Menino bring him on in the last minute or
I think he did,
yes.
Okay. And then there was the tearful scenes in the underpass at the Bernabeu
afterwards. But I just remember him as in the Everton kid, the Everton team of Walter Smith with Oliver Decore and that type of team, which was not great.
Well, you know what? If you have a listen to the podcast, Golazzo, it's called, you'll learn all sorts of things that you maybe didn't know about Marco and how he ended up under the tutelage of Walter Smith at Goodison briefly and what he did afterwards. Extraordinary man who's been at the heart of so many pivotal moments in recent Italian football. Any other podcast news we should know? Jamie, any recommendations you'd like to make at this point?
Well, on the back of listening to this fantastic podcast that I listened to, The Totally Football Show, that I thought, why not do my own? Because I kept asked going on other podcasts, Liverpool fan ones, maybe Everton ones, different times. And I thought, no, I'll do my own. So The Greatest Game podcast is out now.
Among the guests so far, Thierry Henry.
Yes.
Jordan Henderson.
Yes.
Tony Bellew.
Yes.
Okay. Paddy McGuinness.
Yeah, so what we've got is we've tried to mix it with football people, celebrity people who basically have got a love of the game, basically. And the best one the best one we've done that's not come out yet is Steven Gerrard's is really good.
Okay.
But it's not the Steven Gerrard. It's more management stuff.
Okay.
And it's really good.
Does he take us behind the curtain?
Yeah, I mean, he actually goes back to being a kid. And
the smell of mint.
Yeah. The 86 Cup Final, Everton Liverpool, and actually celebrating Gary Lineker scoring, even though he was a boyhood Liverpool fan, which I could not believe. It was a story I didn't know myself. And then I was actually talking to him about the managers he'd had and putting himself in their position.
Okay.
So basically, Rafa Benitez bringing him off against Everton, Gerard Houllier publicly lambasting him after a Champions League game, and Brendan Rodgers basically ending his Liverpool career, putting himself in their position. Could he understand it? Or would he have done the same? And he wouldn't have done the same.
He would not. When's that one going to drop?
That'll be after Christmas, unfortunately, okay. So maybe a bit of a long wait.
Okay, but in the meantime, amuse yourselves with the one that came out today, which features, is it Niall Horan?
Yes.
Is that how you say it? Because I wasn't familiar with, but that features Niall Horan out of One Direction.
Yes, and a massive football fan, a massive Derby County fan. And a brilliant story in that he used to, with his dad, who basically became a Derby fan on the back of Brian Clough era of being successful, they used to get the boat over and go back to Ireland on the, you know, basically they'd be travelling for a full day to watch Derby County games, basically. Wow. Him and his dad leaving very early, getting back, watching the game. Pesca Salido is his favourite Derby County player. There's a huge rivalry with Leeds, so he doesn't get on with Leeds too much, really. But you sometimes forget, listen, he's a megastar, isn't he? But so many of us, we're all massive football fans, aren't we, when we're kids? And he was one of them. As I said, he's gone on to do what he's done. But I don't think you'd ever forget that thing when you first go to the game, isn't it? 7, 8 years old, and that's where the love of the game comes from. So that's what he's gone for.
It was a nice touch for Derby in 07-08 because they were only going in one direction that season, weren't they?
I'm going to tweet that later.
So that's on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts and all the usual places right now. Michael, Chelsea Villa. Chelsea had lost their last two and did they look much better here?
They did. We spoke on Monday about the fact they hadn't committed a single foul in that defeat to West Ham. They committed 7 here on just one player, on Jack Grealish. So they were certainly a little bit more feisty. It was a bit of needle to the game. But Chelsea were the better team. I think probably the two main takeaways would be, one, the goals both came from the same source, right wing cross, which is concerning for Villa because they conceded 2 to right wing crosses against Manchester United as well. And the other was just that the players who we've almost already started to take for granted, who Lampard has brought through, were the guys involved in the goals. The first one was James setting up Abraham, and the second one was Abraham setting up Mount. And they're just, you know, they've not been the most consistent in recent weeks, which I think is natural considering their stage of the development. But yesterday were really good, especially Mount, who I think was, you know, there was a bit of back and forth between the fans, between, how can I phrase this? Aston Villa fans were singing that Mount was a poor man's Jack Grealish, and Chelsea fans vice versa. So it was interesting to see the comparison between Mount and Grealish, who may be going for the same spot in Southgate's England squad.
Right. That is interesting. Chelsea visiting Everton at the weekend, while Villa will be hosting Leicester. Leicester continued their fine run, staying in second place with the 2-0 victory over Watford. How big is that game on Boxing Day, Jamie, when Liverpool visit, fresh from that trip to Qatar?
It is a big game. I was at Leicester against Everton. I mean, the atmosphere at Leicester, sometimes you talk about new grounds and maybe not having the atmosphere of the old place they come from, but I mean, every time I go there, the atmosphere is fantastic. You know what they've done in that stadium, and when they the winning goal went in, also the drama of the VAR was just brilliant to be in the stadium when it happened. And I think certainly the worry for Liverpool, especially with them being top with Leicester, is Brendan Rodgers, when he was manager of Liverpool, almost winning the league, was on the back of Liverpool that season not being in Europe. And actually having a training plan where Liverpool were almost, you know, blowing teams off the pitch in some ways physically around that. So that would be a worry for Liverpool in the second half of the season if Leicester can, you know, continue the run that they're on. And if Liverpool go far in, maybe not the domestic cup competition, because I think they may not mind actually going out to those two. But if they're in Europe and, you know, you've got Leicester team who are fresh. And also because it's Leicester, we're almost thinking the underdogs against the Liverpool or a Man City, and rightly so. But they've got players in the team, a lot of them who've won the league. Mm. You know, they've been there before. Liverpool haven't really got too many within their squad. So, yes, it is a huge game. I think the big thing for Liverpool, with certainly Leicester and Man City now looking like two rivals, is that those two teams haven't played each other yet. They've still got to play each other twice. And I think a big thing for Liverpool is when they go to Qatar, as you mentioned, the league game Liverpool miss, I think it's West Ham away, I think. That day, Man City play Leicester. So No matter what happens in that game, it's going to be almost a good result, if you like, for Liverpool.
Just on fixtures in the future, obviously Arsenal's famous 49-game unbeaten run, Liverpool on a current club record unbeaten run. If it continued and fixtures weren't juggled around due to whatever, do you know what the 50th game would be? Man City away.
Wow.
So that would be big.
But it's not going to be
should,
that.
Sky should do that game.
But is that what it's going to be, even with the current fixtures as they are?
Yeah, as it stands, yeah. Assuming the game they miss when they're away for the World Club Cup is rearranged before that game.
Before that game, right.
How many are they on at the moment?
32
now, yeah. Okay.
In other potential record chat, Jamie Vardy has now scored 7 games running, taking him to 4 games of his own record for scoring in consecutive Premier League matches. And if he carries on scoring at that rate, he could equal his own record in that game against Liverpool on Boxing Day.
Brilliant. Brendan Rodgers was saying yesterday that Jamie won't be focusing on that. You had a season under Brendan, didn't you, Jamie?
Yes.
And how was that?
It was good. I spent a lot of time watching rather than playing, I must say. But no, I really enjoy. Listen, Brendan Rodgers is a manager who will be someone who will. He just loves coaching and managing. He'll be a manager till he's 60 or 70 in different jobs and different experiences. You think of, say, Lampard and Stevie Gerrard now. I'm not sure they'll be managers till they're 60 or 70. They want to have a go at it, they experience it. You know, they may finish in 10, 15 years' time. But someone like Brendan, his whole thing is about, you know, coaching, managing. And almost you think, I think he was 38 when he took the Liverpool job, right. I think, Brendan Rodgers. And I think that there is something, obviously, that he will want to have a crack again at the real top. And that's why this, you know, you talk about Arsenal, certainly right now. But I've said for a long time, even when he was asked, he's the best British manager out there. Maybe you could argue there's not great competition, really, because the top jobs, a lot of foreign managers have those. But you think of the experience he's had, some good, some not so good. But, you know, being at Liverpool, Celtic, really, the pressure would come with the Liverpool job and dealing with that. I done an interview with him probably 2 or 3 months ago about that, and he was really good on how dealing with the pressure, and he almost wants another go of that pressure. And I think he will get another go, whether that's this season or next, what you might call it a so-called, you know, the top six club.
You know the impression that the general public have about Brendan Rodgers? Do you kind of... What's the biggest misconception that we have about him then? With the envelopes and the...
Yeah. No, I know. I get all that. I see all the Brenton and all that type of stuff on social media and you know, that type of stuff. And I'm not sure there is that many misconceptions, actually.
It's pretty accurate.
Yeah. No, but he's a... He's a really, really, really good coach. And sometimes I think in this country, when we get a coach like Brendan Rodgers, who likes to play that type of football, maybe the way he speaks in press conferences, it's not the way we like our manager. But if a foreign manager is like that, we almost embrace it, really. So I think in England, we think, oh, who's he think he is? This type of fellow, whereas, as I said, we embrace him from a foreign type of thing, really. But we've got a British coach who wants to play the way Pep Guardiola wants to play, or the real top, elite managers want to play, really. And I think we should embrace it. And that's why I think at this moment he is, or certainly not just now, I've been saying for a while, I think he is the best British coach out there.
Right. To be fair, the envelopes thing he took from Sir Alex Ferguson, who did it at the end of United's first title winning campaign.
Yeah, not a bad place to take where it is from.
But probably looks worse when it's on that
on camera
documentary right, thing. Yeah. Which I think, in all seriousness, really did his reputation a bit of a disservice. I think he struggled to get over that for a while, Rodgers.
Was that the season? Did he do that with you?
Yes.
And what was the reaction among the players?
To be honest, I think everyone thought it was almost like a gimmick in some ways, really. I don't think anyone took it too seriously.
Did he ever reveal at the end of the season the three envelopes? No. But you have to, surely, if you're going to throw that gauntlet down. You can't not go back to the envelopes.
Yeah, I think everyone knows it was. There's never anyone's name in those envelopes. But, I mean, I don't think that did us any good. You talk about, actually, documentaries now, and there's a lot made of Mourinho and the one coming out, and the Man City one. Ours was embarrassing. Mm. Ours was terrible. It was, what was it? I'm not even sure what it was called.
Was it Becoming Liverpool?
Being
Liverpool, yeah. Right.
Oh, God.
I think it kind of showed how not to make club documentaries in a way, in the sense that you look at all the ones that have come out since. You mentioned the Man City one, the Leeds one,
Sunderland
the Juventus one with that terrible voiceover on Netflix. But they're basically just PR exercises. You can see that the club have got quite a big say over what goes out, and the Man City one was fascinating, but you didn't ever really see anything that you weren't supposed to see, whereas you got a lot of that in the Liverpool one, which is what made it such compelling viewing, and unfortunately for Brendan and some of the other lads.
In football news, Wolves beat West Ham 2-0. Saints had another win, 2-1 over Norwich. Palace handed Bournemouth their fourth straight defeat. And this was 10-man Palace, who hadn't actually won at home since September. How bad is it going to get for Bournemouth as they drift down to now just 2 points off the bottom three?
I mean, this was really bad to be playing against 10 men for 70 minutes. And I mean, they dominated possession, but they weren't really creating chances. I thought that was really worrying. As we've said before, they're just a confusing team, Bournemouth. I never know what to make of them. Sometimes you watch them and they play brilliant, free-flowing football. This was an opportunity to do that. And yeah, they barely created anything, but Palace's defensive organisation was fantastic. And I think the player who really deserves a lot of credit is Jordan Ayew, who basically did the work of two players for a lot of the time here and led the line well. You think of Jordan Ayew as quick, he goes in behind, but he was also holding up the ball, bringing others into play. And I must admit that was a signing I wasn't convinced by, but obviously it was their last season. They got him permanently, but he scored some important goals this season and was excellent on Tuesday night.
Yeah, but it's a weird one with Bournemouth. I mean, obviously, Matt Davis Adams on this programme has tipped them for relegation.
And, right. Which we scoffed at.
Well, I didn't, to be fair.
Did you not?
I might be saying that now. But yeah, they only had five shots after the red card, which is not great when someone gets sent off in the 19th minute. And they've actually had six more players sent off against them than any other team in the time they've been in the Premier League. So they technically should know how to play against 10 men better than anyone else. So,
right.
But like Michael said, you never know what you're going to get from them.
There was a question, actually, this one's from Richard Foster, re that very topic. How many times has a team with 10 men beaten one with 11? I suspect, says Richard, the ratio is higher than expected, maybe 30%.
It's gone for a nice round number. It's around 20%.
So, is
it? Yeah, which is, I don't know if that's higher or lower than you'd imagine. Probably.
That's higher than I'd imagine.
Presumably it depends a lot when the red card is.
I mean,
this was 20 minutes in it, 0-0.
Yeah. I mean, the all-time best team at it, unsurprisingly, are Arsenal, which obviously mainly came in the early Wenger era when they pretty much had a man sent off every game and still won. They've done it 34 times, which is genuinely impressive. But you've got 70 minutes against Palace. You should probably have a few more shots.
Yeah, not just Palace, but Palace, who then had Patrick Van Aanholt off with injury.
Yep.
And I think it already got a bit of a defensive crisis going on in terms of injuries anyway.
Yeah, Cahill was out. It was a strange red card, that. I almost felt, I'm not quite sure what he's meant to do. It's so hard not to make that tackle and not to end up following through. I kind of see why it was given, but I've got a lot of sympathy with Sacco there. It's just impossible not to challenge for that ball, I think, if you're a defender.
Just quickly on Bournemouth, as you say, four straight league defeats and their next four, Liverpool at home, Chelsea away, home to Burnley, then home to Arsenal. So might be a tough winter for the Cherries.
Yeah, indeed so. Liverpool next. Liverpool have actually won on their last two visits to the Vitality Stadium 4-0 on both occasions. Salah getting a hat-trick last season. Harry Wilson won't be available to play because of the archaic loan rules in this country. Josh King is out. So this might mean Dominic Solanke coming in to haunt Liverpool. It could happen.
It could. Weirdly, this is Liverpool's sixth Saturday 3pm game this season, which is equals last season.
So, that's weird because?
Well, because people say big clubs never play at 3 o'clock on Saturdays anymore, but Liverpool are doing it quite a lot.
Right.
I think we're all, or certainly from Sky's point of view, maybe the other broadcasters are
saving
Liverpool games because they think something may happen.
Jamie, do you get a role in that, in selecting the fixtures?
No. I think people on Twitter think we do, the amount of abuse.
It's all Gary then, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, I think we get our schedule, well, listen, when the games come out on the, I think it's a month, 6 weeks in advance.
Right.
But there's no doubt, I think it is a really interesting thing, how they pick the games. A lot goes into that, really, and seeing what BT or other channels are picking and what who they've picked, and they can't pick this team for that week and that.
So you have a quota of how many, say, Liverpool or Man City games you can have.
Yeah, yeah, and it's how many first picks, and you can't pick a certain team. If so many first picks in a row, you've got to let, obviously, BT have a game also. So it's a lot goes into it. It's quite interesting, really, actually, when you speak to the people and the reasons why they pick certain teams, or you'd almost let someone else have a big fixture,
mm-hmm.
and they almost have to take, but that means then they can't show that team again that season. And there's a lot goes on.
I always used to like the way when Stoke were in the Premier League, they'd always choose Stoke home games because of the atmosphere and the long throws. I can't ever remember a Stoke away game ever being live on telly.
Well, I can't. The one we laugh at that, I can't remember us ever doing a Monday night football where Newcastle have been at home. Newcastle are always away from home, and I think it's because we know all the supporters will then watch and get the viewing figures up maybe, but that's something that's maybe not great for Newcastle, but it just feels like we always do them away from home as we did. I think we've done a number of times this season already.
Newcastle are in action late tonight, away at Sheffield United. So they'll all be tuning in for that. Arsenal-Brighton is the other game this Thursday evening. Arsenal are in action on Monday night. You'll be doing them the game away at West Ham, Jamie.
Yes, and we've got Rafa Benitez coming in.
Ooh.
Which should be good. Fingers crossed nothing happens majorly and Arsenal get a decent result tonight, so there's not more talk of maybe them moving another manager on, Freddie Ljungberg. But yeah, got Rafa coming in. It's a good game for us, a lot riding on, I think, for both teams and maybe both managers. So listen, it's good to get him in. Monday Night Football is about maybe a lot more tactical than maybe other shows that we do, and you've probably got one of the most tactical managers coming on, so it'll be obviously I know him well, but it'd be good to see what he's got in store for us.
Brilliant. All right.
Well, Freddie Ljungberg returning to his former club as well, West Ham. He had a really weird one-season spell at West Ham.
Did he?
You clearly have forgotten about.
No, I don't think I ever knew about it in the first place. When was that?
2007-08, I think. It was after he left Arsenal and before he went to India and America and Japan.
Nick Miller of this parish has been doing an excellent series based very much on that, of, you know, players who had spells at clubs.
That's a great one.
That's one right there, isn't it?
Because he was briefly linked with the West Ham job last week, or it was said that West Ham were monitoring Ljungberg's developments. And just thought, that's weird. Are they convinced he knows the club from that one season at Upton Park 12 years ago? I don't know, it just seems a strange one to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Producer Ben asks, Jamie, what are the odds of Rafa going to West Ham or Everton?
Well, the funny thing with Rafa Benitez and Everton is actually Everton fans are quite, or certainly warming to the prospect if it did happen. And there was someone I follow on social media, like an Everton fans forum, and it was a vote between David Moyes and Rafa Benitez, and Rafa Benitez got 90% of the votes, would you believe? But I think there was a story yesterday I read in the press. He's on a huge contract. Rafa Benitez is now the new club he's at, and I think it'll take an awful lot of money to get him out of that contract. There's no doubt. I think he wants to, maybe whether right now or certainly in the future, he wants to be back in the Premier League. I don't think he's going to get one of the plum jobs, if you like, with the top six. So I think someone like a West Ham or an Everton, who are just outside of that, really would be the best he could get. But I just can't see him at Everton, really. I just can't see it. But West Ham, who thought they had Rafa Benitez, I think, a few years ago, and on the day he was due to sign, he got a call from Real Madrid. He went to Real Madrid, so West Ham missed out on him. So there's obviously connections there already with the club. So I think West Ham is a job I could see Rafa Benitez doing in the next few years.
Interesting. A lot of unhappy West Ham fans on Twitter last night as well. A fair amount of Pellegrini out chat. Obviously, they got that fantastic win at Chelsea, which no one saw coming, but that's the only league win in 9 games.
Right.
So a lot of unhappy hammers around at the moment.
Yeah. It's not been the greatest of seasons. We'll have loads more questions coming up in a second or two, and a bit of a quiz, excitingly, Michael, because I know you're a big fan of those.
Love a quiz.
First of all, though, let's get some odds on the weekend's fixtures. Paddy Power with producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Lee Price is on the line. He's from Paddy Power, and I know you're excited. Lee, let's start, please, with the Manchester derby this weekend. What's going to happen here?
Well, clearly Man City, the favourites here. They're 2-7 to win this match. United 8-1 to win the Manchester derby, with the draw 9-2. Rashford was at the double for the Reds in midweek. 11-4 he scores any time here. While Raheem Sterling, rumoured to become Man City's highest ever paid player, is even to score any time. And if he does, Paddy Power offering money back as a free bet on all markets. TNT's apply, of course.
Over to the South Coast then, and it's Bournemouth hosting Liverpool. Can Bournemouth, who are in a horrible run of form, can they do anything against the Reds?
Bad news for Liverpool naysayers. They keep winning, and now they're starting to play well too. We expect them to win again this one. 2-5, they beat Bournemouth, who are 11-2. The draw, 7-2. We've heard Jamie Carragher raving about Sadio Mane. Senegalese is even to score any time in this one, although of course he could be rested. We make it 4-1 that Origi and Shaqiri, the super reserves, both come in and score again.
And finally, it looks like the clock is very much ticking now on Watford's time in the Premier League. What's going to happen when they take on Crystal Palace?
Another day, another huge fixture for Watford, another new favourite for their next manager. They're 5-4 to get the win here, with Palace 21-10. That's very tight, but we just about make the Hornets the favourites for this. The draw's 11-5. As for the next manager, the favourite at the minute is Kike Setien, 7-4. Big Sam is a 7-2 second favourite. The change in my octave there, an indicator of how surprising that is. Mark Hughes, 6-1 third favourite. Sabri Lamucci, fourth favourite. Can you get a more bizarre list of candidates?
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Loads of questions for you, Jamie Carragher. Here's another one from producer Ben, who's kind of abusing his position here. But anyway, he says, everybody knows you as a one club man. Did you ever have, though, one of those almost went to another club stories?
No, I don't. And I don't think, I know for a fact my agent never ever spoke to me and said, this club are interested, you know, do you fancy this? I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that actually no one outside of Liverpool actually rated me to move on. Roberto Martinez, when I worked with him on TV, actually told me he tried to take me at the very end of my career to be part of a back three that he used when he used to play 3-4-3 for Wigan. I think I was out the team under Kenny towards the end of my time, but I got no wind of that, really. So, no, I haven't got no juicy stories. I mean, my name was never in the paper linked with anyone. I used to just pray one Sunday morning I'd wake up and see myself linked with someone to give me some sort of ego boost. But, no, unfortunately, it never happened.
Sorry about that. SHL, what were your favourite derby memories involving you personally?
Well, my first derby game, I played centre-back. I think I was 19. I was up against Duncan Ferguson. And at that time, he had terrified Liverpool for 4 or 5 years in the Joe Royal era. Roy Evans was manager of Liverpool at the time. So that was my first derby. Basically, no one could control Duncan Ferguson. Me and Michael Owen's job was to basically double mark Duncan Ferguson on set pieces because no one on their own could cope with them. And to cope with that, Duncan Ferguson gave me an elbow very early on, which certainly livened me up for my first derby game. But I could play those games. I loved them. I was a massive Everton fan as a kid. Went on to play for Liverpool. And the derby game for me is still the biggest game of the season.
Watching the Class of 92 series,
It says John Morgan again. It seems even his own brother finds it hard to say nice stuff about Gary Neville. As a former player for his biggest footballing rival, what do you really think of him?
I mean, I could not stand him as a player. I can put up with him now.
Why could you not stand him as a player?
He was Ferguson's little rat on the pitch, wasn't he? He was just, you know, he was, you know, running up to referees and antagonising people, and, you know, he was just Gary Neville, basically. But no, get on fantastically well with him, surprisingly. Now, he's a very funny man, which may surprise a lot of people. He's a brilliant pundit. He's fantastic. Now he's opening hotels all over the place in Manchester. He was a great player. He's just not a great manager.
Right. Have you so far anyway, how have you ever been tempted by management?
I think when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, in the dressing room at Liverpool, I think if you'd have asked anyone in that dressing room who'd be a manager, me or Stevie Gerrard, I think probably 99% of people would have said me. I
was just because of your daddiness.
Of course. But no, I mean, listen, I'm obsessed by football. I watched everything. I read everything. I do now. I always did as a player, consumed by the game. And I think Rafa Benitez and Gerard Houllier maybe put me off it in management in a little way, because they're the two biggest influencers on my career. The two of them together was 12 years of my Liverpool career. And the man who came in, I was so impressed with. And the man that left was just like a completely different person. That's what the job had done. I'd also been lucky that I'd played for Liverpool my whole career. I'd never had to do a normal footballer's life, if you like, of moving your family around the country every 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So probably that put me off a little bit. I'd done a little bit of punditry and a bit of coaching. I enjoyed the punditry a little bit more. It was ITV, I think, in the Euro 2012 at the first time, with actually Roy Keane, who's with us now on Sky. And I got the bug for that a little bit more. And to be honest, Sky asked me to do the job before someone offered me a coaching role, if you like. So I took that job.
Brilliant. Okay. How much would you have liked to play with Virgil van Dijk?
Oh, I loved it. I'm not sure Virgil van Dijk would have enjoyed it too much. But no, he, as I mentioned before, what he does to other players. I mean, the interesting thing is that he's seen as the, and rightly so, he's the leader. He's the daddy at the back. And I've never played in a football team where someone has told me what to do on the pitch. I've always been the person who told someone else what to do. So I'd actually quite enjoy that dynamic of actually who actually gave in, really, and accepted that the other one was going to tell them. And I can't see myself giving him. Virgil van Dijk's a far better player than me, but he wouldn't have been able to tell me what to do. It would have ended up me having to tell him what to do, whether they needed it or not.
Just on that, the interesting thing is everyone thinks of van Dijk as Liverpool's leader. He's not actually the captain. Was that a similar dynamic when you were there with Steven Gerrard was the captain, but you always came across as more of the, you know, natural leader?
Yes, in that, listen, I think a lot of made certainly now of captaincy, it almost seems to have gone out the game now with the, you know, the armband. I mean, you look at the Arsenal situation now as well, with Aubameyang now captain. But there's no doubt I was what you might call, seen in people's eyes, as the old-fashioned captain who's having a go at people onto the referee, whereas Steve, he was almost was a captain that people looked up to. I mean, every time a new sign and joined Liverpool, the first thing they say is, I want to play with Steven Gerrard. So he was always that figure, really. But yes, in some ways, yet Stevie wasn't someone who had a go at players too much on the pitch. I think, I've been totally honest, I think he was a lot more respected than me, and the dressing room, he was a far better player than me. But he was someone who would speak to the players privately, or, you know, text messages, or, you know, different things. Whereas I was very just, you know, just get on with the game. I don't need to have relationships with people as so much in the dressing room, really. And I think that's probably a big part of captaincy now, because I think probably the players that you're playing with are a little bit sensitive. You talk about managers now having to manage a group of players and not give them the hairdryer or the Ferguson treatment is a lot different in management. I think that, I don't know, like maybe in captaincy as well. And I think it's interesting that Stevie has gone into management and I haven't, in that I look at people like maybe even Gareth Southgate, that the people who you associate as captains, or you naturally think they'll be managers, I think it's now changing, where it's the actual, the quiet one, the thinker, if you like, who's more of that, as opposed to someone who's ranting and raving on a pitch. I think I do more than ranting and raving, but I think you know what I'm coming at. And I think, yes, that was my role as I said, on the pitch to be like that. Stevie was never going to be like that. But I think it's just interesting that those type of personalities now become more managers.
Yeah, I remember when Southgate was a player, people always used to say, oh, he'll make a good pundit. Yeah. They never actually said he'll make a good manager. So, yeah.
To be fair, he is a good pundit.
Yeah, he is a good pundit. Well, you know that he sometimes used to listen, so you're always nice about him.
That's
as well.
That's right.
Excellent. All right, here's a quick quiz then, a Jamie C quiz. Let's see how you do here, Jamie. And anybody else? I know you boys are big quizzes. So, but anyway, question one: you played 737 games for Liverpool and scored 5 goals, not counting the ones you know.
Yeah.
Who were those 5 goals against, Jamie?
Aston Villa,
correct.
Middlesbrough,
yes.
Fulham,
yes.
Southampton,
yes.
How many are we on now?
4.
Oh my God. Kaunas?
Yes.
Yes.
It was FBK Kaunas.
I didn't want to bring up the own goals, but do you realise you've scored 0.2% of Tottenham's goals in Premier League history?
I do now, yes. Thank God for Richard Dunn, though. He's saving me.
Who called you the third best defender in the Premiership in the 2004-05 season?
Is it an AC Milan player? Is it Maldini?
It is Maldini, yeah.
Yes.
But and I've seen you say since that you were just delighted he knew who you were.
Yes, I was. I was, when I said I was obsessed with football, I think before the Pep Guardiola Barcelona team come on the scene, the best team I'd ever seen was the Milan team of the late 80s, early 90s with Baresi and Maldini. And they were videos that Benitez used to show me. His big thing, Benitez, was Arrigo Sacchi and how he set his team up, and we tried to almost mimic that in terms of how we played as a back four. You're never going to do that, but yeah, the big heroes for me were Maldini and Baresi, who actually tweeted, and I retweeted it, that Virgil van Dijk should have won the Ballon d'Or a few days ago, Baresi said.
Interesting. Okay, question three then. Who was Rafa Benitez talking to when he said, if you understand Cara, you'll understand everyone?
Was he talking about my accent?
Well, he was, but he was talking to a player. I mean, to be fair, it was really just an excuse to get that quote in. He was actually talking to Fernando Morientes.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So on to question four, final question. Who were you talking about when you said he's the only number nine ever to go through a whole season without scoring? In fact, he's probably the only number nine of any club to do that. He was always the last one to get picked in training.
I think that may be my friend Aladji Diouf.
It was, yeah.
Yes. The man we signed and missed out on, Nicolas Anelka, which was not a great start for any player, really. And that was, I think, one we all look back at towards the end of Julio's time, and you think about where things started to go wrong. It was probably that decision, really.
Fair enough. On such moments, our destiny is created, which is something we like to go and look back on in flip reverses. Oh. That's a ripe topic for discussion one day, Duncan. Excellent. Well, you got kind of 3 out of 4, I think, Jeremy, no? Yeah, which, you know, you'd hope you would do. So that's nice. Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today. You're very welcome to return anytime you like. In the meanwhile, you're entering the Potter's, or you've entered the Potter's Field with The Greatest Game, and mention all the exciting ones up at the moment. Who have you got in the pipeline for that?
Well, I interviewed Martin Johnson, World Cup winning rugby captain. I interviewed him last week, so I got him coming up. He's a big Liverpool fan. Craig Bellamy is another one, which he was really good. Craig Bellamy is, I mean, we all have interpretation of Craig Bellamy. He's got a really good football brain, and that's a lot more, you know, about the game. Obviously a few funny stories in there as well. We mentioned this, the Stevie Gerrard one also. Neville Southall.
Oh, right. Okay.
Who was a big hero of mine, who's very prominent now on Twitter and is very funny on there, speaking about a range of subjects away from the game as well. That he's very big on, he's very political, certainly on social media at the moment. So I think we're going to get to a series of 13, basically. So I think we're almost done with this series, and then we'll come back again after Christmas.
Right, because it is hard work, let's be frank. Michael, you're going to be back on this show on Monday.
Yep.
Along with Daniel Story and Benji Lagnardo.
Great.
It will be interesting to see his take. We're talking about miserable West Ham fans, see how he's feeling about life. Duncan, what have you got up next after your Korean jaunt?
Just preparing for Christmas.
I see. All right.
Traditionally.
It's a Christmas party tonight.
Yeah,
it's our Christmas party.
Muddy Knees Christmas party.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't go to it because of there's the football.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a good excuse.
Hope I look as
bloody
fresh.
Football, eh?
Yeah.
Hope I look as fresh tomorrow as Jamie looks after his.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, here's a late question and a good one from the boss who wants to know, what did you think when Terry touched you up? Read the Rogers sack. This is fantastic. I mean, you've seen the clip a billion times now.
Yes, Thierry, yes. He has now gone back into punditry. I saw last night he was at the Merseyside Derby. Yes, it was something that we tried to recreate a few months later, but didn't actually quite work. But it was just... is that when something goes viral? I think that was the first time I worked out what viral meant in terms of social media. So, no, it was it was a good one.
But when he actually reached over and touched your leg, what did you think? Because it doesn't happen often in a studio.
No,
does
it doesn't. And it was just that look into the camera. And I've seen all of there's like, I think my favourite one is the EastEnders music, where it just touches my leg and then the EastEnders music comes on. To be fair, we didn't have a clue Rogers had gone. We just got told then. It was a strange actual time, really. 6, 7 o'clock on a Sunday night that Brendan Rodgers has gone. I didn't realise we were all in shot.
Right.
And sometimes when you're looking down the barrel of the camera, I was actually the producer and the director thinking, I can't believe Rodgers has gone, but I didn't think I was actually on camera. So when I look down the main camera, that was almost like a nod to them thinking, wow, what a big story we've got there. But it was a four shot, shall we say.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Tom, you're back with us soon, but in action at the Christmas party this evening.
Yes, very much so. Looking forward to it.
Where's this Christmas party? Can I get any details? Or
Secret location in Soho, I believe.
It's nearby. I mean,
it's posher than last year.
Is it posher than last year?
Last year was just...
We can't say on air, apparently.
The highlight of last year was Tom falling over. So
I thought we were not going to mention that ever.
Did you? Oh, you fell over after the karaoke. I performed Dancing on the Ceiling upside down.
Oh.
Which is, I think,
the
high point.
Way.
Or indeed the low point simultaneously.
Well, Michael, in the karaoke, performed a beautiful rendition of End of the Road by Boys Two Men, in which he'd changed the lyrics that it was about the sad demise of the 442 formation. And that was quite something.
Never change.
That's not true. That is fundamentally not true. Right. None of that is true.
Anyway, we will have stories of that, perhaps, but certainly of the weekend's action when we return on Monday for more Totally Football Show fun. Many thanks for being with us, everybody, today. And you especially, listener, have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you after.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.